but we want to tell more of your stories this year. And indeed, yesterday on Drive, I brought you the story of a family. Two working parents with four kids, the youngest just 4 months old, forced to effectively pitch tents near Margaret River. Why? Both mum and dad are in work. Well, because the home that they'd been renting was suddenly put on the market to sell. And they thought, okay, well, we'll find something else. And they haven't found something else. And I'd also like to thank Angela, who was just such a lovely woman to talk to. Not just stoic, but dealing with a difficult circumstance with great good humour. And thank you also to those people who rang up and offered support. In fact, a couple of people have offered houses, so we put Angela in contact with those folks. But it was a reminder, I think, how quickly the rug could be pulled from beneath any of our feet. Now, West Australian researchers have been following 100 families in our community living in poverty and disadvantage, and the research team has just released the latest snapshot of how these families are faring. To tell you more, Louise Giolito, the CEO of WACOS. Louise, hello to you.
Good afternoon, Jeff.
I can't believe this is the first time you're in the studio. We've talked so many times over the years.
I'm so delighted to be here and see you in person.
Well, I'm very glad to have you here. Now, can you tell me a little bit about what participants in the 100 Family Studies have said about their experiences in the last few months?
Yeah, this is quite a remarkable study in itself, because it's a partnership between UWA and seven agencies. And the research in itself is unique, because it's listening and hearing the stories of people who have been living in entrenched poverty for over 12 months, and it's been following their stories for over 12 months. So it's listening and hearing the stories. And not surprisingly, but there's many messages that are coming out about how the systems and the structure is actually failing them time and time again. How they feel quite invisible in our community, that people actually don't see them or hear them. And that includes government and community services and how we've all got to do better. How when we design programs, they're not there at the forefront. They know the help and support they need, but they're not being invited into the room to design those support services that will, you know, pull them up out of poverty.
It's a not unfamiliar story in that people with good intention are seeking to help others, but not necessarily by asking what kind of help the other requires.
That's very, very, very true. And it's also how our systems and structures work. There's often criteria put around. So you'll, as an agency, you'll get funding to service X, Y, and Z in this particular area. It could be an age criteria. It could be a service type criteria. So that person comes to you for help, but you don't tick a box that's actually required. So they often have to go to multiple services, retell their stories, which is extremely draining. And one of the things this research and their stories, even using the word research, pulls at me a bit, because it's people telling their stories of experience about talking about even when they walk into an agency, sometimes they feel totally invisible again of how they're just telling a story and they're a number. And the difference it can make, just that one person on your reception counter who treats them like a human being, that they're actually being seen and they're being heard, and kindness, how important kindness is shown towards them.
Tell me a little bit about some case studies with pseudonyms, Sally and Kurt. Tell me about their experiences.
Yeah, and this is all through the 100 families. I mean, it's 100 case studies, basically. And there's some real similarities, including Sally and Kurt, is the lived trauma that these people have had in their life. And those particular cases, the trauma goes way back to their childhood, and there's stories around abuse that's really impacted them as they, you know, come into adulthood and actually raise their own families. So it's that lived trauma that they've actually brought with them. There's other stories. Another one that came out today is women escaping family and domestic violence. That's often the story. So when they escape the perpetrator of their violence, they actually escape into poverty. And there's many reasons for that. Some of it is income support's not enough. We don't have enough social housing. There's a layer upon layer upon layer of barriers that stop people getting the help that they actually need. But in most of these cases, there is some level of trauma, and mental health was the biggest number one issue right through, and it's a bit chicken and egg.
Yeah.
Because of their lived experience of trauma, has that caused mental health? But living in entrenched poverty, does your head in. It takes up every waking moment of your life about how am I going to pay my bills. It takes all joy out of your life, and that in itself causes anxiety and depression.
Louise Giolito is the CEO of WACOS, my guest this afternoon, telling us, Louise, in a way, you're telling us things that we know and we ought to know better. So when we talk about agencies or governments failing to truly get to the needs of people in unfortunate circumstance, and you talk of criteria and box ticking and a sense that people have of being anonymous or ignored, we know that. So how do we humanize the experience whereby I am providing you, Louise, with greater assistance, but I also have the capacity to hear what your problems are and tailor what we have to best dealing with what those problems are?
I'm going to use the word trust here, and it's trust on two levels. We have to trust that the community services can actually meet the needs of those people who come to actually see them. So not having all the criteria in the boxes that they need to tick,
yeah,
to equip the funds. Trust in the people that actually come and seek our support and that the help that they need, that they know themselves. So that's the beginning. But we've already seen a big solution that happened during COVID, the COVID supplement payment for people who are on JobSeeker.
Yeah.
That lifted people out of poverty. And a paper we released before this one indicated the big impact that had on people's lives. Huge. Improved mental health. People got jobs during that period because they were lifted up out of poverty. They were able to help and support themselves. There's some just basics, some fundamentals that we can do straight away. Trust the people.
When we talk about JobSeeker and how Australians were meant to live on $40 a day and had been living on $40 a day for a long, long time, I could say this government, but why doesn't, because I'm not actually, in fact, before the last election, the Labor opposition, instead of saying we will lift that payment, said we will investigate, we'll inquire into that payment. That was a weak response too. So why doesn't government see off the back of the COVID-19 experience the benefit that putting a few extra quid into people's pockets every week has had in lifting them away from this very dangerous aspect of how they live today?
That's really a question for government. And
I knew you'd answer like that.
I've been asking that question myself, and I agree with you. We've had a weak response from the Labor government, and we've also had a terrible response from this Liberal government. So we're really hoping this research, and especially what happened during COVID, will help build the argument of the impacts this will actually make. It will take the stress off our health system, because we know people are in entrenched poverty, they need mental health, they have health issues, they end up in emergency, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We need to start connecting the dots and stop blaming the individual. That was one of the things we learnt through lived experience. It's become very popular, and I'm hoping COVID has actually changed this, about labelling people, you know, the leaners and the lifters, and
yeah,
et cetera, et cetera. So we're hoping that story is going to change through media as well. I'm really hoping, you know, in the lead up to the election and afterwards, and because of COVID, we think there's a great deal and stronger empathy across the community, that the well-being of our community will be a focus on this election. One of my sayings is, because there's a very strong focus on the economy and jobs, which is fantastic. A five-year-old doesn't need a job. Somebody on an age pension doesn't need a job. We need to start concentrating on community well-being and everyone's well-being.
Yeah, and I remember Carl O'Callaghan used to say, as many people have said, you don't be parking the ambulances at the bottom of the cliff. You look at what the causes of the problems might have been. Louise, come back in tomorrow so I can say you're here all the time. It's always really good to speak to you. Thank you so much indeed.
I'd love to come back. Whenever you call, Jeff, I'll be here.
Thank you. The 100 Families Project is a really interesting one, Pete.